Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Oh boy. Hi, this is Dr. Jennifer Daniels. And this is Healing with Dr. Daniels. Actually, I cannot hear. Hello, this is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. As always, please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, the non-antibiotic solutions to 10 common infections or remedies so powerful they make antibiotics almost obsolete. So I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Today's topic is a really exciting one. It is how prostate cancer became a disease. That's right, how prostate cancer became a disease. And this is definitely one where truth is stranger. So we're going to take you way back in time. I'm going to take you back to 1975. And just take you right up to the present. And, you know, I'm sure you're going to have a lot of questions, so just call in. And I think it's star one, raises your hand, be happy to answer them. So once upon a time, not very long ago, it was the year 1975, and prostate cancer research was stymied. Nobody would take prostate cancer research seriously. And these researchers labored in obscurity, and relative poverty, actually, especially if they were not very high paid. How do I know this? Well, as usual, I had a front row seat. I was a high school student, and I volunteered at the local hospital, and I was a member of the Medical Explorers Group, and we got to visit with doctors and see what their research was. And so we just happened to visit with a doctor who was researching the prostate gland, and he just seemed totally beaten down, and he felt totally unappreciated. And this was really an issue in medicine because women were being treated for all manner of illnesses, but men were not going to doctors. And this remained a revenue stream that was seriously untapped. However, men did have a male-specific organ, the prostate. This is comparable to the woman's ovaries. It manufactured the male hormone testosterone and those little sperm and semen that come out when men ejaculate. Now, this organ was pretty obscure. Men were creating pregnancies with great regularity, and in general, they were pretty full of themselves. In fact, in 1975, if you will recall, the baby boom was winding down. So men were pretty happy with themselves, and they felt that their sexual abilities were okay. They weren't even bothered much by the women's lib movement, which was, at the same time, kind of petering. And actually, women's lib movement, the guys were handling it pretty well. They figured, what the heck, now we've got two paychecks. But there's an issue here. Research showed that at least 30% of men at autopsy, at whatever age, had prostate cancer. Older men had even more prostate cancer, suggesting that it did not shorten life expectancy. These men died of old age, heart attack, car accident, and few, if any, deaths could be attributed to prostate cancer. The challenge was to find a way to screen for this harmless, silent condition and create awareness prior to death and offer diagnostic tests, biopsies, medication, and all manner of intervention so that this incidental finding could become a billable medical event. Next, it was necessary to get men to clamor for diagnosis and treatment. This was a tall order, as there was no evidence that this condition was of any importance during the life of men or that it in any way contributed to the death of the corpses studied. And so this was a real challenge. But there was a female model to follow, which was breast cancer. And so the drumbeat began. First, I have to take a little station break. You are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Channel at BlakeRadio.com. And please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free report, Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And that's VitalityCapsules.com. And, of course, I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. So, the medical society, I won't say the medical society, really, the researchers, the pharmaceutical companies, the device manufacturers, and the hospitals looked for something. And the first thing they came up with was the alkaline phosphatase test. You don't hear much about this, but this is where everything starts. This is back in the early 80s, 82. How do I know? Hey, I was there. I was there in medical school. They were devising this test and telling us how to use this test and how to interpret this test. Unfortunately, this blood test was elevated when there was a bone problem or a liver problem or a prostate problem. And there's a great difficulty marketing it to doctors because it was cumbersome and expensive to order. Evaluations were not conclusive. And because it was so expensive, that few men were willing to pay for a test that was negative so much of the time, and even though it was positive, it didn't really mean anything. And so then, in the mid-80s, came along a test called the PSA, prostate-specific antigen, emerged. Now, this name inspired confidence, even though the PSA was not a reliable measure for prostate cancer. But the naming of it was, you know, marketing magic. Men said, hey, prostate-specific antigen, it's a specific test. That's for me. I think I want that. And doctors were reluctant to order it. But then it became mysteriously the standard of care. Now, I have to tell you what they told me in medical school. I went to medical school in 1979 to 83. And we got to the part on prostate cancer. I was like, oh, boy, I'm excited to learn about prostate cancer. And I said, this is a short chapter. Don't look for it. If you find it, don't treat it. These men are going to live a long life, and they're going to die of something else. End of discussion. And, oh, you might want to order an alkaline phosphatase test if the guy's pretty wealthy and he'll pay for it. I said, oh. Well, geez, if I'm not going to help anybody with the test, why should I order it? So I kind of put it out of my mind. I didn't really think much of it. And then we got the prostate-specific antigen test. And they, and I say they because it wasn't the doctors. It was some higher authority. It was just usually a pharmaceutical company, insurance company, or hospital. That's who makes these rules. Set up normative ranges for PSA tests. And any guys who fell outside that range would get biopsies for prostate cancer. And there were urologists, those are the doctors who specialize in men's and men diseases, in Syracuse, New York, who actually resigned, closed their practice, and refused, they said, to maim and defile males in this manner. They just were not going to do it. So let's take a look at the numbers. Now, these numbers come from the United States Census Bureau, the National Cancer Institute, and, of course, Mayo Clinic. So let's take a look. The life expectancy of a man in 2010 in the United States was 78.7 years. This is an important number. So if you live in the United States and you were male in 2010, you could expect to live 78.7 years. Anything much beyond that, really, you know, don't count on it. And so if we look at 2005 to 2009, the median age at death for cancer of the prostate was 80 years of age. 80 years of age. So, in other words, half of all prostate cancer victims died after the age of 80. Well, that's pretty darn shocking. And that's a statistic from the government Medical Statistics Bureau. So 50% of men with prostate cancer die after the age of 84. It's a later, more recent study. In the population as a whole, only 1.9% of men live beyond their 85th birthday. So having prostate cancer would seem to be a major advantage in terms of longevity. And then if you do a few more mathematical manipulations, it comes out to about 83% of people who are over 85, men rather, have prostate cancer. And so whereas the general population as a whole, only about 1.9% of all men live beyond their 85th birthday, but only 50% of people who are going to die of prostate cancer die of it after age 85. So that's incredible. So prostate cancer, then, by one interpretation, is actually a marker for longevity. So there's a song by Diana Ross called Love Hangover. It's something like this. It says, if there's a cure for this, I don't want it. If there's a remedy, I'll run from it. I don't want a cure. I don't need no cure. And the song goes on from there. So prostate cancer, I think, falls in that situation. But things didn't end there. So now we're up to in the 80s. The 80s are the PSA tests. In the 90s, man, it just absolutely took off. As a doctor, if you did not order a PSA test for your male patient, your male patient would think that you were incompetent. And certainly, it was not consistent with the standard of care. However, just having a test wasn't enough. We needed a drug. And finally, a drug became available, and that was Proscar. And Proscar is a progesterone derivative. But the important thing about Proscar is that it increases the risk of male breast cancer, of anxiety, of sexual dysfunction, and side effects include, of course, impotence, 18.5%, abnormal ejaculation, 7.2%. And these are the symptoms of people who did not have the symptoms before they took this medication. Decreased ejaculatory volume, abnormal sex function, and erectile dysfunction and ejaculation disorder, and if that's not enough, testicular pain. So this is not an easy drug to endure. Fully 25 to 30% of people taking this drug are going to have this drug really mess with their personal and sexual lives. But that's what we offered Proscar. And believe it or not, people actually came to my office begging me to prescribe this for their enlarged prostates. Now, the next thing that happened... So that went on, and men were getting biopsies, and my patients were getting biopsies. How they made it to the urologist, I do not know, but they found their way. And I would have guys who were just on biopsy number 4, 5, 6, and 7, and they were getting complications with the biopsy, pain, rectal discharge. So they go in through the rectum and then put a needle through the rectal wall into the prostate in order to do a biopsy. And what this does is it tracks in the bacteria from the rectum into the prostate and causes serious prostate infections that have actually killed people. So we have a non-deadly disease being treated with a biopsy, which can cause deaths and infections. So let's take another look at what's going on. Now, prior episodes of Healing with Dr. Janice, we always take a look at drugs that might be contributing to the situation. And so we're going to look at something called the PDR, Physician's Desk Reference. That's our friend. Remember, we're using a special edition, and that has a section on side effects that the drug companies find after the drug is released and are not obligated to reveal to the public or to doctors. These side effects are in the regular edition, are not in the regular edition of the PDR that doctors get for free. In other words, it doesn't have to be there. It might be, it might not be. So we have shot our wad here, paid big bucks to get this 10-pound book. It's a special version of the PDR. So let's see what drugs cause prostate enlargement and possibly contribute to prostate cancer. The way things work, though, is once you, your doctor does a rectal exam, your prostate's enlarged, he does a blood test, the blood test is elevated, and the prostate's enlarged, then you get a biopsy and you're kind of off to the races. So let's take a look here. What do we have? Well, we have androgel. What is androgel? Androgel is a form of testosterone used to treat a newfound disease called male menopause. Now, if you recall, there's something called female menopause, and women get estrogen and progesterone for female menopause, and this greatly increases their chances of getting breast cancer. Well, now we have a parallel situation with men where this new disease complex called male menopause or andropause, a lot of names for it, is treated by a drug, androgel, which increases your chances of prostate problems by 16%. That's huge. Now, andropause is also characterized by depression and mood swings. And so, of course, you have to have an antidepressant. That would be maybe Effexor or Paxil or Fenapt or Wellbutrin. Guess what? All these drugs, all these antidepressants I've just named, increase your chances of having prostate enlargement and difficulties that will lead to a biopsy. And Celebrex also causes prostate problems and enlargement. And what is Celebrex? Celebrex is a drug that many men might be taking for arthritis. Now, there's some back and forth about this, taking it off the market, putting it back out of the market because of devastating, even deadly side effects. But should you survive the drug, it can give you prostate cancer, leading to a prostate biopsy, leading to an infection that you might not survive. Then we have protonics. Protonics causes 3% of the people who take it to have prostate problems. Now, what is protonics? Protonics is a proton pump inhibitor used to treat the side effects of taking an aspirin a day. So if you have one of these conscientious, health-conscious guys, and they're taking their aspirin a day to prevent some imagined situation, then they can end up taking protonics and get a very real issue, which is an enlarged or painful prostate, necessitating a biopsy and a lifetime of medical intervention. And what else? There's Tricor, which is a cholesterol medication, also contributes to prostate problems. There's Avapro, a blood pressure medicine, contributes to prostate problems. And Aricept, this is for Alzheimer's. This contributes also to prostate problems. And Elderpril for Parkinson's. Again, if you take this, you're going to have increased PSA, which is a blood test, a false increase in the PSA, indicating you have a prostate problem, and maybe you really don't. I'm sorry, Rizmal does that. Rizmal is used to treat heart arrhythmias. Then there's Avalide, a high blood pressure medicine, and Savella, a fibromyalgia medication. So there's an assortment of drugs that contribute to this situation. And one more drug I want to mention is Travitan. What's this? This is an ophthalmic drop. This is an eye drop that your conscientious ophthalmologist might prescribe for you, and it has a 10% instance of causing prostate problems in people who did not have prostate problems or symptoms before they started taking it. So you can see it's pretty treacherous waters out there for that middle-aged guy, 50-plus. Now, what if you have prostate issues? Well, if you have prostate cancer, what's recommended is that you continue to get rectal exams, blood tests, and biopsies, needle biopsy via the rectum. And as we mentioned, this does lead to death on many occasions from resistant bacteria that are introduced via the needle. It also causes erectile dysfunction. In fact, I did a study. And guys who had numerous prostate biopsies had like 30% incidence of erectile dysfunction, whereas guys who had just one biopsy or maybe a couple of samples taken instead of 30 or even 40 samples didn't have as much of a problem. And so it causes erectile dysfunction, infections which can be deadly, getting up at night to use the bathroom, frequent urination, and pain and difficulty urinating. And so what does the doctor do if he thinks your prostate is getting larger? Why? Then we go to the next step, and you get surgery or radiation if your prostate cancer appears to be growing. And it may grow and spread between checkups. Now, this is really unfortunate type of characterization, because the growth of the prostate, even though it's cancerous, between chapters may be caused by the low-grade infection that occurs because of the recommended biopsies. And so when you look at the Mayo Clinic recommendations, they don't mention the biopsies that might advance the disease, because the capsule is a very hard fibrous capsule around the prostate. It serves as a wonderful barrier to the spread of illness, either the spread of bacteria into the prostate or the spread of prostate cancer out of the prostate. And every time you have a biopsy and this needle pierces that barrier, that creates an increased amount of harm for the particular patient. Now, what if the poor guy can't stand it anymore? He's had prostate cancer for 10 years now. The doctor's been having him come back and get these biopsies and they've been blood tests and watchful waiting. It's like, oh, my God, Doc, I've got cancer. Can't you do something? Well, then there's external beam radiation or implants. And the radioactive implants seem to be popular lately. These are rice-sized radioactive seeds that get put in the prostate tissue, and they literally nuke the guy's prostate. And I don't know what it does to his partner in case he's, you know, still sexually active, but they say that not to worry. But side effects for the particular guy of radiation therapy can include painful urination, frequent urination, urgent urination, as well as rectal symptoms like loose stools, pain when passing the stool, erectile dysfunction can also occur, and the radiation can cause another form of cancer, such as bladder cancer or rectal cancer in the future, which is far more deadly than prostate cancer. So if you have a cancer like prostate cancer, which is associated with increased life expectancy, by submitting to therapy, you can exchange it for a deadly cancer like colorectal cancer or bladder cancer, and your symptom-free life is filled with sexual dysfunction and a lot of really distasteful symptoms. Now, of course, there's hormone therapy. Now, hormone therapy is treatment to stop the man's body from producing the male hormone testosterone. And prostate cancers rely on testosterone to help them grow. Well, we now know they also rely on estrogen, too. And so the theory goes, cutting off the supply of hormones may cause cancer cells to die or grow more slowly. Now, this is key. The word here is may cause. And that, to me, was shocking, that you're going to cut off this guy's hormones and, as you'll see later, cut off his balls, literally cut off his balls, doing something that may help, that we don't know really helps. And when I was in my residency, and I finished medical school, and I was now in hospital, and I was training, and I saw a guy, he was a wealthy guy, and his wife came in with him, and he had prostate cancer, and our job that day was to adjust or renew his hormone therapy. And I was like, wow, this is great. We have a hormone therapy for this prostate cancer guy, and I'm so excited to hear how well he's doing. And so I examine him, you know, take his blood pressure, make sure he's not getting any side effects from his medicines, ask him a few questions, and then write him a prescription. I don't have to undress him or anything because that's been done enough times. And finally I said to him, well, Mr. Jones, how is it going? How is the therapy? Aren't you glad you caught this early and that we're treating this? The man burst into tears. He absolutely cried and cried. He said, this has ruined my life. I'm not a man anymore. I might as well just carry a purse and go shopping with my wife. He just lost it. And this is the kind of thing, as a medical student, when you see this result of a therapy that was presented to you in class with such incredible confidence as the correct thing to do, I mean, it just kind of shakes you up. And I said, woo, I don't know if I want to go around diagnosing this condition, because, again, the medical school, they told us, people who have this condition live at least as long as everybody else, back a little longer. So the medications they give are like luteinizing hormone, releasing hormone. They give agonists, prevent the testicles from getting messages to make testosterone. And drugs typically used in this type of hormone therapy include Lupron. And let's just stop right there. It turns out that Lupron is a drug that causes prostate enlargement and worsens prostate symptoms. And that's really shocking, that a therapy that, according to standard of care, is appropriate to use in treating this disease has documented side effects of causing the disease, of worsening the disease. And so, but this doesn't stop it from being the standard of care. And so many men I'm aware of have received Lupron therapy. And they say, oh, you know what, Dr. Daniels, I am so glad I got that Lupron. I think that saved my life. And what do you say to someone like that? You know, there's not a lot to say except, you know, I'm glad you're doing so well and I hope it continues. So there are also medicines known as anti-androgens, and they prevent testosterone from reaching your cancer cells. These are like Casodex, Flutamide. And these drugs are given along with the other hormone drugs. And, of course, just surgery to remove the testicles. I mean, can you believe this? Men are submitting to surgery and having their testicles removed for a cancer which is associated with longevity, a cancer which is associated with actually living longer than people who don't have this cancer. So removing the testicles definitely reduces the testosterone levels in your body, and the effectiveness of orchiectomy in lowering testosterone levels is similar to hormone therapy medications. Now, they say similar. That means we have to go back to the prior paragraph and say, may be effective, may be helpful. So we're going to tear off both this guy's balls for something that may be helpful. But the hormone levels do go down a little more quickly. Now, in prostate, and then with advanced disease, they use hormone therapy to shrink the tumor quickly, and sometimes we'll even use it after radiation to stunt the growth of any cancer cells left behind, because sometimes, of course, some are left behind. And then the therapy doesn't end there. There's also surgery to remove the prostate. Now, I have to just interrupt myself to say, whenever you have a medical condition that has numerous modalities of therapy, here we've gone through, right, the hormone intervention, cutting the poor guy's balls off, you can put radioactive seeds in there, now you can cut the whole thing out. When you have that many choices in therapy, that means that no one particular choice is especially effective. And that's a mental note to make there. And so surgery to remove the prostate involves removing the prostate gland, sounds good, and some surrounding tissue and a few lymph nodes. Now, what's the big deal about lymph nodes? When you remove lymph nodes, that means you can get swelling in the area. So this guy now has no balls, and he's got tissue down there that's going to swell up and make him uncomfortable. Similar to the swelling that women will get in the arm associated with on the same side as the breast that was removed. And so people at the Mayo Clinic are very nice here. They go into a great technical detail as to where the poor guy is going to be sliced in order to enter his abdomen and take things out and go between his anus and his scrotum, and how this is a pretty good thing. And they can do laparoscopic, which gives the guy a smallish scar. That's nice. And then they can use robots. And they're working on this, so after a while using robots, guess what? They can replace the surgeon. Then the hospital insurance company can have a bigger profit because you don't need to pay the doctor. You can just have the surgery, the robot do the surgery. Most doctors don't realize that that's kind of the way that is going. Now, radical prostatectomy, it's the surgery we just talked about, carries a risk of urinary incontinence. This guy's got to wear diapers. Or what I've seen guys do is wear a Texas catheter where they have a condom at the end of their penis and their urine is constantly emptying into a bag strapped onto their leg. And you can freeze the prostate tissue, and they basically use ultrasound images as a guidance, and they put a very cold gas in the needles and causes the tissue around the needle to freeze. And then a second gas is placed in the needles to reheat the tissues, and this goes back and forth cycle of freezing and heating. And at first, attempts to use cryosurgery for prostate cancer resulted, as you might imagine, in a very high complication rate and unacceptable side effects. I didn't say what they were, but I imagine you would have a big gaping wound down there that never healed. But one can only guess because they don't really tell us. However, new technologies have lowered complication rates, improved cancer control, and made the procedure easier to tolerate. Well, there you go. What do you do? And all this, again, for a cancer that's associated with longevity. But it doesn't stop there. This compliant patient, agreeable patient, can get heating of the prostate tissue with ultrasound. It can get chemotherapy, just like the breast cancer ladies can get chemotherapy. And then that's pretty much the list of treating the actual prostate cancer. Again, we have to reiterate, the enlarged prostate or benign, which is harmless prostate hypertrophy, generally associated with no symptoms, is treated with Proscar, a drug that increases the risk of male breast cancer. And by the way, male breast cancer in the United States is on the rise, associated with anxiety, sexual dysfunction, and incredible side effects that to a functional male who has an active sex life can be a real impediment. Now, in 2009, these study researchers found that the use of the PSA test led to 1.3 million American men being diagnosed and more than a million treated, all for a cancer that was never going to bother them. And this is said by the study author, who is a physician and professor at Dartmouth Medical School in Hanover, New Hampshire. Unlike me, he still has a license, and this is his expert opinion after doing an extensive study at Dartmouth Medical School. Now, the National Cancer Institute, let's see where they weigh in on this. The National Cancer Institute says that by age 50, very few men have symptoms of prostate cancer. Yet some precancerous or cancerous cells may be present. Now, I have to inform you that precancerous means not cancerous, okay? And most precancerous cells, by the way, never become cancerous. So more than half of all American men have some cancer in their prostate glands by the age of 80. And most of these cancers never pose a problem. They may never cause problems or become a serious threat to health. Most men with prostate cancer don't die from this disease. They die from something else. What do they die from? They die from heart attacks. They die from car accidents. They die from other cancers. But they don't die from prostate cancer. And to give you just a gist of this, only 1.8% of all American men live beyond the age of 84. 83% of those have prostate cancer. Now, only 16% of American men have prostate cancer just in general. So these guys with prostate cancer have a disproportionate degree of longevity. So what is a man to do? Well, I have to give you a disclaimer here. This is not medical advice. This is not designed to cure, treat, or improve any disease or symptoms. And if you take my advice and something awful happens, then I'm not liable, either is the station, and it's on you. Okay, great. That's a disclaimer. So now I can speak. So what's a man to do? It would be my professional opinion that it does not make sense from a medical point of view to get screened. This means if you have no symptoms, for goodness sakes, do not submit to any type of prostate test. If you have symptoms, and let's say you find out you have prostate cancer, you submit to the various things, the biopsy, whatever, I suggest you throw a party. And you should throw a party because you've now realized that you have entered that elite group of people who has an especially high chance of longevity. Again, I draw your attention to the very nice song written by or sung by Diana Ross, and it's called Love Hangover. Now, you should listen to this song at least 2 times a day, and it's got a lot of really important information in it, but the big information is, if there's a cure for this, I don't want it. If there's a remedy, I'll run from it. And a few other things. Actually, the song gets really pretty exciting. You can get pretty hot under the collar. And I would say, if you're not totally aroused by the end of that song, you probably should go ahead and get surgery and get everything cut off. But listen to that song, and that'll definitely guide you in the right direction. Now, a lot of people listening are saying, oh, come on, Dr. Daniels, there must be something I can do, maybe something natural, because it is the tradition of Americans to not want to do nothing. Doing nothing is something that is absolutely frowned upon, and that I find that really shocking. There are times in life when doing nothing is actually the best thing to do. But we're way overdue for station identification, so we're going to do station identification. You are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free report, Remedies So Powerful They May Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And that's VitalityCapsules.com. Of course, I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-9. So I'm sure someone's going to have some questions. So I know I was really shocked to find that, holy cow, I was being asked to intervene in the lives of these men, inconvenience them with drugs, destroy their sex lives, over a condition that's associated with longevity. I'm like, that's amazing. What I did do when I was in practice was I would either refer the guy to a urologist, the one urologist I mentioned who actually closed his practice because he refused to treat such things, or I talked him into just simply not doing very much. Okay, so what can you do naturally if you're inclined to do anything at all? Again, I have to stress that this is a condition that's associated with disproportionate chance of living to be 85, when the average male in the United States really has always got to look forward to is about 80 years. So what can you do? What really causes prostate cancer? The latest research from the alternative archives, so to speak, is it's a hormone-mediated disease, and I think even the regular guys, medical researchers would agree with this. And so then what you need to do is eliminate anything from your life that's going to interfere with or blunt your own male hormones. And, you know, I have to tell men this. You're a guy, you're a man, you're supposed to have testosterone. Whatever your testicles are making, whatever they are creating is correct and okay for your body. So you got to really, you know, really believe that and really go with that. So what does this mean? This means that every hormone that your body did not make is not okay with you. So you need to first avoid all hormones that your body doesn't make. And so where are the hormones hiding? First of all, we have to take a look at this male menopause thing. That means you absolutely may not accept therapy for male menopause, right? Because male menopause, only two therapies available, There's the testosterone, which we know feeds the abnormal behavior of the prostate gland and puts you on this whole treadmill of prostate disease. Or antidepressants, which would be the SSRIs or the SNRIs. And these medications, again, enlarge your prostate and give you lab tests that show you have prostate cancer when maybe you actually do not. So that's one thing you can do. And ladies, same thing for breast cancer. Refuse all hormone intervention because we know the intervention is what leads to the cancer in these reproductive organs. Okay, so here you are, you're a guy, you're 50 years old or older, you've stood firm, you know, you're not going for this male menopause thing. So what are you going to do? What if you really are having menopausal symptoms? Maybe you're having some hot flashes. Maybe you're having some mood swings, or maybe, you know, your equipment's not working so well. What can you do besides submit to these hormones? Well, it turns out that there's two organs in your body that make testosterone. One is your testicles. That's obvious. But the other organ is not so obvious, and that's your liver. So what happens is your testicles do whatever they're going to do, and that's that. But the liver makes up the difference. It's the liver that keeps you having those erections the rest of your life and really keeps things very exciting and high quality and keeps you, you know, having an even disposition and not having hot flashes. So what should you do? You should clean that liver out. You should definitely clean out the liver. Cleaning out the liver is actually easier than people think. The first step in cleaning your liver is drinking more water. And, you know, I say don't overlook the obvious. We have a question here, so let's see. The person has a question. I'm going to click this button here. Oh, my God, it's twirling.
Hello?
So 1722, you're on the air.
Yes, Dr. Daniels, my question concerns your, you know, your the findings of the study that cites prostate cancer as a marker for longevity and being
That's
like
my
80.
Conclusion. That's my conclusion, because the studies show that the people live longer, but my conclusion is it's a marker for longevity. So I just want to say I drew that conclusion from the study myself.
Okay, so is this still true if, in fact, a person has been diagnosed with prostate cancer and has succumbed to the biopsy, and now there's a likelihood that the cancer has metastasized outside of the gland? Is that, you still have the same opinion?
Prostate cancer can metastasize outside the gland, even without medical intervention, but it does take, as you say, a lot longer. There really hasn't been a lot of study on that. However, Basically, the studies on prostate cancer in terms of therapeutic intervention, if you do absolutely everything your doctor recommends, you're going to, on average, live 6 weeks longer than had you not done what he asked.
Right. Okay.
And
I mean,
if you submit to the next step, which is maybe chemotherapy or something, you're going
Say all of the medical suggestions for treatment are being ruled out. And the person has had this biopsy, and there's some likelihood that by penetrating the bowel wall, the rectal wall, and the gland itself, that the prostate, the cancerous cells may have leached into his lymph nodes or, you know, wherever. So at that point, does the person still feel... Do you feel as though the patient would still have this longevity going on without doing any of the things that the doctor suggests for them to do?
This is my personal opinion,
mm-hmm.
and again, this is from reading the literature, is the individual, should he decide to stop right there, it's like a game of 21, right? If they hit you and you're busted, then that's it, you're done. If that person should decide to stop wherever he is, he would be better off, and I'll tell you why. The studies have shown us increased mortality just from the biopsies themselves.
Right. That's what I was getting at.
Prostate biopsies are deadly. And so even if the person has a prostate biopsy, the question is should they continue and either get further biopsies or further manipulations. And what the studies are showing is there's actually a mortality associated with these interventions. So based on that, I would say, you know, you're, at whatever point you stop, you're better off.
Okay. And now you're starting to get into what natural treatments are better served with this condition?
Yeah, what you can do naturally. There's a lot you can do naturally.
Okay.
Well,
I will hang up and listen to the rest of the program then. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's see here. Okay, great. All right, so first thing is the key here is the liver, and that's because this illness is cleared by the liver, and the function of the and the liver actually picks up the function of the prostate gland. So the first thing you do is you drink more water. What kind of water do you drink? This is controversial, but I'll give you my opinion. My opinion is either distilled water, reverse osmosis water, or mercury filtered water. Either of those three will do just fine. So now you've got your water going on. Next thing you need to do for your liver is you can take milk thistle. That's my favorite thing because it's a passive protector of the liver. What does it do? It just covers the leak and coats all the liver cells so they can suck up all the bad guys, which would be the bacteria, the cancer cells, the chemicals. It puts them into the biliary tract and into the intestines where you can put them out into the toilet, which is the next thing you need to do, which is poop regularly. It will be three or more times a day. Because especially when you have cancer, you have to empty your intestines at a faster rate. And that's because the reason you have cancer is because you have a backup. So you got behind. So people who have cancer generally tend to poop twice a day, once a day, or even, heaven forbid, skip days. So you have to poop. Okay, so now you've increased your water intake, so now you have better circulation. The chemicals and stuff can be brought to the liver for disposal. You're pooping more, so the output from the liver, when it hits the intestines, is going to make it to the toilet. It's not going to end up in the intestines and get stuck there. So you've got all this stuff going, and everything's circulating very nicely. The next thing you need to do is you need to take a look at your hormones. Where are you getting hormones? You need to shut off every single source of hormones. And for men, most men eat a lot of meat. Now, I'm not going to tell you to go vegan, but I will tell you this. Do not eat any animal whose natural size is bigger than what you want to weigh. So if you're a 200-pound man, you want to eat animals whose adult size is less than 200 pounds. So you pick your number, and that's going to determine what you eat. Okay, so now you know what animal you can eat. The next issue is you have to eat animals that have not been fed artificial hormones. Now, when I first got into all this natural stuff, I was not very sophisticated. And so, of course, I thought, duh, that animals were injected with hormones, which is true. They were injected with hormones. But now they're putting the hormone in the commercial animal feed. And many people who are raising animals and who are buying animal feed don't know that hormones are in the animal feed. For example, if you raise chickens and you buy chicken feed, there's something called egg-laying feed. And, of course, the egg-laying feed has hormones in it to help the animal lay eggs. And this is something that, I mean, your regular naive individual who didn't grow up to be a farmer wouldn't really pick up on that. You would say, oh, this just gives the chicken more nutrition and maybe you'll lay more eggs or better eggs. Not so. Now, the other thing that goes on with meats is that antibiotics are in the meats. And was mentioned in the research studies I reviewed is that when men get these biopsies, the needle tracks bacteria from the intestines into the prostate, and that's what kills these guys. So what's that got to do with it? Well, if you're taking antibiotics, the antibiotics are increasing the amount of resistant bacteria in your intestine. These resistant bacteria in your intestine are harmless. They can't do any harm to you at all in your intestine. But when the doctor introduces that needle through your intestinal wall into your prostate, all of a sudden, this deadly bacteria that was in a harmless location ends up being transported to a lethal location. And so what you need to do to protect yourself is decrease your population of deadly bacteria. Now you might say, oh my God, Dr. Daniels, I had eaten antibiotics all my life in these meats. What if I already had deadly bacteria? Not to fear. Research has been done that will help you too. If you stop eating antibiotics for 30 days, one-third of all the people who do that will no longer have deadly bacteria. Deadly bacteria will literally, on their own, convert to non-deadly bacteria. And that is, like, very good news. So the sources of antibiotics are, believe it or not, drinking water, tap water, so don't drink tap water. Eat filtered water, the kind of one of the three that I mentioned. Meats, pretty much all commercial meats, so you need to really inquire, does this meat have hormones? Does this meat have antibiotics? If both answers are no, then that's the meat for you to eat. Okay, so we got rid of that hormone source. The other hormone source is plastics, believe it or not. In our house, we have switched out all of our plastics to glass. And at first, it's like, oh, I want to do that. Oh, that's difficult. But, you know, there was a time people lived really well without plastics. So I'll be very honest with you. First, we took all the plastic containers we were using for leftovers and we converted to glass. And I just have to share this with you because certain glass containers will explode spontaneously. So I was sitting in the living room and I heard this explosion in the kitchen. I'm like, well, nobody is in the kitchen. So I go to the kitchen and there are these bits of glass everywhere. This glass container exploded. So you have to check when you buy these glass containers and ask, is this the one that explodes? This is actually a known safety hazard. Apparently, if you Google on the internet exploding glass, they'll even show you the brands that explode. So all of those exploded on us, and so now we went and got another set, and these don't explode. These are not exploding. So we do use plastic tops on them, but the plastic tops don't touch the food. So do replace your glass. Replace that glass, and that's done very well. Then we replace all of our drinking glasses. Unfortunately, the drinking glasses, they do drop, and, you know, we buy about 6 new drinking glasses every 6 months or so. So switching the glass is going to create some lifestyle situations, but a broom and a dustpan, a little bit of broken glass is no big deal. It could save your life. So that's our drinking plastic. And then we bought glass bowls, so now our plastic bowls are switched out, and we have glass bowls instead of plastic. And it really hasn't been as traumatic as we thought it would be. So I would really encourage any of you men who are listening or any of you women who are listening to change out all of your plastic you might have in the house. That is a huge, huge, huge source. Oh, by the way, drinking bottles. Those of you who exercise, drinking bottles. We now use stainless steel water bottles. We don't use any of the plastic. They have the low BPA, whatever, low chemical plastics that don't leach. And you know how that works, you know. They'll say this plastic is okay, and then 2 years later you find out, well, it really wasn't okay. So I would say, you know, for your drinking, your sports bottles, definitely go to metal. Yes, our sports bottle has some dings in it, and we just live with that. My husband's a perfectionist, so he says, oh, my God, honey, there's a ding in your water bottle. I said, yes, dear, it's okay. We're going to survive this. So it's no big deal. Just really switch out the plastic. It's not as difficult as you think. Even if you have children at home, feeding your little boys out of plastic containers, that means they're going to get prostate cancer earlier in life and be subjected to a lot of sexual manipulation and all kinds of issues. So it's better just to not get started. So you're switching out your plastics as a source of hormones, and then medication. Those are the biggest source of hormones. So if you have a prostate issue, get rid of those things. All right. Now, the next priority, if you've done all that, is you want to go back and do some more work on your liver. And to do more work on your liver, you want to take your B-complex 50 vitamins, because that's what livers love. The liver loves B vitamins. If you don't have enough B vitamins in your diet, then what's going to happen is your liver, your heart, and your brain are going to play this game of musical chairs. And if there's not enough B vitamins to go around, either the brain's going to not get enough, you're going to stroke, or the heart's not going to get enough, you're going to get a heart attack. So the liver is never the one that goes without the B vitamins. It always lets the other two go without B vitamins. So take your B-complex 52 a day. What that's going to do is it's going to help your liver work at a higher level to help clear your system of the cancer, and you're going to do a lot better. And then you need to get omega-3 fats. Now, if I owned a drug company or a pharmaceutical company or a vitamin company, I would tell you, get this brand, get that brand, buy this, whatever. But the real deal is good old flax seeds, quarter cup a day, that's really, that will do it for you. And what that's going to do is if you have prostate cancer, one reason that you have it is because you don't have enough omega-3s. And so what's going to happen when you get enough omega-3s is your body is going to take all the synthetic or defective spare parts it's been using to make cell membranes. It's going to throw them away and use these new, good, healthy fats to replace those membranes, give you some nice new, healthy membranes, and actually improve your sexual function even. So it's really a worthwhile thing to do. So how do you take flaxseed? You have to take a quarter cup, that's your minimum effective dose, add a cup of water to it, let it soak overnight, give it a stir in the morning, and down the hatch. It doesn't taste great, doesn't taste awful, it's really pretty bland, and no, you do not need to chew the seeds, because when you let them soak, the omega-3s come out of the seeds into the solution, and they're very easy to absorb for your intestines. And this also helps with your physical strength as well. So those are your basics for naturally, and I do mean naturally dealing with prostate cancer. I have to say, foods. You got to get rid of the processed foods. And for most men, that means eating at home. If your wife cooks it, that's what you eat. And for your wife, that means not using packaged foods of any kind. So you're going to be using whole grains. You're going to be using meats without hormones or antibiotics. You're going to be using organic vegetables, organic fruits, organic spices, and any combination of that you like. The last source of hormones I didn't mention was dairy products. That would be milk. But that is handled because obviously cows are bigger than people, and so you wouldn't want to eat milk because it comes from the animal bigger than your maximum human male weight, which is between 200 and 300 pounds. I'll be generous about that. So those are the basics, and those really help a lot. And if you have any issues about that, check out my recipe books, Healing Recipes, at vitalitycapsules.com. And there's lots of recipes in there that are prostate-friendly, don't have any dairy, special ways to make creamy sauces without any dairy products or any tofu or soy. By the way, soy is very bad. It's high in estrogen, so you don't want to eat that either. But you don't want to eat any processed food, even if it's from the health food store, even if it says organic. You know, you have to just don't fall for the hype. But that's Dr. Jennifer Daniels. I'm sorry, it's vitalitycapsules.com. And it's the Dr. Daniels Healing Recipes. And you click on the lower right corner down there. But the cure for prostate cancer really is a food cure, a clean out the colon cure, and help the liver cure. And that's really what it takes. This is not a drug thing. Now, there are herbs that can help. My favorite herb is small willow flower. It's absolutely phenomenal. Guys love it. It keeps them from getting up so much at night to pee. It's great for their sex life. It just really helps them out quite a bit. So small willow flower herb. And you can Google that on the internet. It's actually only sold by one or two different places. And I recommend that you get the actual flower itself and even make a tea and just drink the tea. And that's actually pretty easy to do. And most teas, contrary to what anyone might tell you, you can brew a tea and sip on it for 2 or 3 days. So if you're not into brewing tea every day, you can just brew a quart or two once or twice a week. Now, we have to identify yourself one more time. And you are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Channel at BlakeRadio.com. And please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free report, Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And that's at VitalityCapsules.com. And we are coming up on the hour here. We have 4 minutes. It's quite a few callers here. If anyone has any questions, I could take one more question. Otherwise, we're going to sign off. Okay, well, thank you very much for listening tonight. Oh, and next week we have a special guest. Well, she has asked her employer if she can come on. Now, how's that for a free country? But this is an insider who is a patient model, and she's going to tell us how, in medical school, they're not even allowing students to see real patients anymore. They're using models so the students don't get a whiff from the real patients as to how bad things really are and how unpopular these therapies are. So next week, it's the medical model. That's the title of our episode, the medical model. All right, we'll see you then. Okay, thank you for listening, and visit VitalityCapsules.com. Goodbye.